Hello, everybody. I'm Chris Gasper, and welcome to Season Ticket. It's Thursday, December 14th. We're going to delve into an important, serious, and hotly debated topic today. Does Boston sports have a racism problem? As part of a seven-part Globe Spotlight team series entitled Boston, Racism, Image, Reality, the Globe tackled this issue in today's paper. I'm joined now by one of the contributors to that series and the author of today's article, The Bigot in the Stands and Other Stories on Boston Sports and Racism, Boston Globe Metro columnist Adrian Walker. Adrian, welcome to Season Ticket.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Hey, thanks for joining us. So I think a big issue that really inflamed this topic was the Adam Jones situation back in May. And let me recap that for people who are not familiar. Adam Jones is the center fielder for the Baltimore Orioles. He was playing a game at Fenway Park against the Boston Red Sox. And he said that he was called a racial slur by a fan in the stands and had a bag of peanuts thrown at him. Was that incident the impetus for you guys doing this part of the series?
It was definitely a huge part of it, yes, absolutely. And actually, it was part of the impetus for the entire series.
That's really interesting. So tell me about the discussion in terms of where the Adam Jones situation fit into doing this series in the first place.
You know, it's the way that it reverberated around the country. It's the way that it seemed to touch a nerve with people. Oh, Boston. Of course it happened in Boston. There it goes again in Boston. And the way these incidents kind of reinforce the city's reputation for racism became something that a lot of us wanted to delve into.
And it's interesting because I think sports plays a huge role in that reputation, and you look at the history of it, and we'll get into that. But what I want to start with is something you just said, which is there are other cities that have issues or incidents with sports fans and professional athletes and racial epithets. And you start the story by discussing some of those other incidents. There was an incident in Kansas City where a Washington Redskins player said he was called the N-word by a Kansas City Chiefs fan. You mentioned an incident in Detroit where a Lions fan who was white called black Lions fans who chose to sit during the national anthem the N-word in a Snapchat. There was also an incident in Pittsburgh where a fire chief in the Pittsburgh area on Facebook called Pittsburgh Steeler players, the players he's ostensibly rooting for, the N-word because they were not standing for the national anthem. Yet none of those incidents sort of sticks or resonates the same way that the Adam Jones incident did in terms of being something that people look at and say is indicative of an entire city's attitude about race.
There are a couple of things that that's about. First of all, there's Boston's troubled racial history, you know, busing and its legacy and the Charles Stewart case and all of that. But also, there's also this sense that people expect more from Boston, you know. Boston is thought of not only as this liberal bastion, but as a citadel of higher education where, you know, people are just expected to behave in a more sophisticated way.
Yeah, you're right about that. But I think it does speak to something that Boston and you and I have both dealt with this, you know, being African-American, talking to other African-Americans. Boston has a reputation in the African-American community as being a place that's unwelcoming and hostile to African-Americans. And frankly, that's a reputation that it earned in the past. I don't think there's any question about that. What this series asks is, does it still deserve that reputation?
You know, one of the things we did, and it's mentioned in the first day of the series, is we redid a survey that had been done before where we asked African-Americans about their perceptions of different cities. And by far, Boston had the least favorable public image, you know? So
yeah,
it really resonates around the country. And it's part of the reason that when something happens at Fenway Park, it resonates in a way that it might not, you know, at Camden Yards.
So for me, I think what's interesting about this, and you mentioned the history, this is the city where you had William Lloyd Garrison, the famous abolitionist, publishing the abolitionist newspaper, The Liberator, in the 1800s. But it's also the city where Bill Russell, arguably the greatest basketball player of all time, certainly the greatest champion in the history of the NBA, 11 championships in his career, he also had issues here. He called it a flea market of racism. He had his home broken into and vandalized when he was a Celtic star here. People scrawled the N-word on the walls of his home and defecated in his bed. Yep. When you talk about that paradox, this place that it seems like on paper is supportive of civil rights and African Americans, but then in reality you have terrible, terrible incidents like the one Bill Russell had to deal with. How do you reconcile those?
Well, that's just it. And that paradox is really at the heart of this series, you know? And I mean, I think we all feel that tension, not just in a historical way, but even walking around the city. There's sort of this gap between the way we think of ourselves and who we really are. And sports is a really good lens to look at it, you know? In the course of the series, we've looked at higher education, and we've looked at hospitals and, you know, sort of the industries that define Boston. But sports is one of the things that really defines this culture. You know, this is a city of 600,000 people where there will be 1.2 million lining the streets for a Patriots Super Bowl parade. I mean, you know, you live in this world every day. You know how much that passion for sports has become a real defining characteristic of Boston.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I have friends who came here for college or after college, and they basically felt like if they didn't tap into the Boston sports scene, they were social pariahs. I mean, it's something that is so... What's the old sort of bromide about Boston? You know, the three things that Boston cares most about are politics, sports, and religion.
That's right.
You know, and you can argue about the order, and really here, right. Sports are religion. And I think sometimes that passion can go awry, and that's what happened in this Adam Jones incident. The problem I think Boston has when it comes to racism was illustrated during that incident. You have people who, in my opinion, are sort of racism atheists, Adrian. They just believe that it doesn't exist at all. And so when something like this happens, instead of saying, look, this happens everywhere, Boston has an issue with it, we need to address it, they immediately jump on the defensive and try and defend the honor of the city, and in the process do what has been done to African Americans for 400 years, which is victim blaming.
That's right. The reaction to the Adam Jones thing was really fascinating. The Red Sox reacted the exact opposite of the way they would have reacted 20 years ago. They immediately apologized. They immediately took responsibility for it. You know, the mayor was talking about it. The governor was talking about it. But then there's this whole other side of it that is total denialism. You know, if you say anything about race, it's that you don't love Boston. You know, it's a slur against the city. And it's not, but that is one of the reasons we can't come to terms with our issues and move past them.
I totally agree with you. And I think a lot of these people, if they were so fervent about rooting out whatever racism still exists in Boston, and we can argue about what the level of it is, instead of just defending the honor of the city, I think we could make some real progress. And I think this is something that really hurts Boston's reputation nationally, the fact that people get so immediately, reflexively defensive about it, instead of acknowledging, yeah, we have a problem, but guess what? America has a problem, and we're going to do the best we can do in our city to make this better. And certainly it has gotten better over the years. But to act like it's not an issue at all, or that it's something that just sort of ancient history, and that's one that really gets me, Adrian, is when people act like, well, it's ancient history. And we'll talk about this Adam Jones incident a little bit more, because there are people who obviously don't believe him and think he made it up, because there's no sort of witnesses, no one's come forward. And even though the next night in the stands, there was a fan who turned to another fan and made a derogatory racial remark about the national anthem singer who happened to be from Kenya. That happened the very next night. But there are still people denying this Adam Jones thing. I want to touch on a couple of other ball players who in the past have made comments about playing at Fenway Park. One, Gary Matthews Jr., the outfielder in 2007. He was comparing Sox and Yankees fans. He said of Boston, they're one of the few places you'll hear racial comments. Yes. In 2008, Torrey Hunter talked about racism he had endured at Fenway Park. My first 5 or 6 years, I was, quote, that N-word, end quote. Some people would chant that out. Some people would throw beer or whatever, batteries. David Ortiz said this year in an interview on ESPN that Torrey Hunter, who he's great friends with, did not want to come and join him in Boston. He tried to recruit him, and he said that Hunter could not get over the racial slurs he endured here as a visiting player. So how many of these guys have to speak up other than Adam? Are they all lying?
Right. Why would Adam Jones lie? You tell me one thing Adam Jones has to gain from making this up.
Yeah,
that would be my question.
I wouldn't see what he would have to gain from making up. But even if he is, you have these other players.
You can add CeCe Sabathia to that
list,
too.
That's right, who have said they've endured. So if you're saying Adam Jones is a liar, you're basically saying all these guys are liars.
Right.
Which I think is highly, highly unlikely.
I think it's highly unlikely. I don't see why they would lie. And, you know, no. It makes no sense.
And this is something that I think is particularly peaked for the Red Sox, because let's be honest about their own checkered racial history.
Oh, yes.
This is an organization that was the last organization to integrate. Elijah Pumpsy Green joined this team in July of 1959. That was more than 12 years after Jackie Robinson reintegrated Major League Baseball. It's a team that elected not to sign Willie Mays, not to sign Jackie Robinson. So when it comes to the Red Sox, this is a team that has a history of not always handling race issues the right way, which is really an understatement.
That is a huge understatement, as you know. They have decades of not handling racist issues well.
Yeah, that's true.
Talk to Tommy Harper, you know?
Absolutely,
Who gets to the team in 1973 and discovers that, you know, there's this Elks club down the street in spring training, and all the white players get passes to it, and none of the black players do. Yeah. And the Red Sox were fine with that for years.
For years. Under the Yawkey ownership, and that's why some people, including Red Sox owner John Henry, who's also the owner of the Globe, have advocated for changing the name of Yawkey Way, saying that Tom Yawkey didn't do enough to combat racism in his day. And again, that is part of the story. You cannot erase history. That history, Boston is a place that loves its history.
That's right.
But it doesn't want to acknowledge all
some of
its history.
Yeah,
the history that's unflattering. And frankly, a lot of this, when it comes to racism, that history is unflattering. You mentioned busing and all that other stuff. But they don't want to deal with that. They just want to take, you know, sort of the revolutionary history. But this is a big part of Boston's story. And I think it's a part of the story that needs to be recognized. And it provides context whenever there's one of these issues.
That's right. It's a part of our history that continues to affect us in the present day.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Now, before you wrote this story, you wrote a column in May after the Adam Jones incident at Fenway that I thought was really interesting. And you spoke with former NFL player and Boston College graduate Gosder Charlis.
Yes.
Gosder Charlis is black. He grew up in Somerville. As I mentioned, he went to Boston College. And I thought he told you something that was really interesting. When he played at Boston College, he said he never had any issues with racism. And growing up around here, he thought, like a lot of Boston people, Boston doesn't really have race issues. But then he played for the Indianapolis Colts, and they were getting ready to come to Foxborough to play the Patriots. And one of the guys on the team said, black players, get ready. You're going to hear a lot of stuff. And what happened?
Yeah. And, you know, and he said he was offended, you know, being from Somerville and having played at BC. And then he comes to Foxborough for the first time. And indeed, he hears more racist crap from the stands than he did anywhere else in his entire 12-year career, by far. He was shocked by what it was like to play as a black player in Foxborough.
And this is somebody who was doing what a lot of people do, defending the city. You mentioned he was offended. And then he experiences this really being on the other side of it for the first time.
Right. Then he discovered it's all true.
Yeah. I thought that was a great part of the column you wrote in May, because for those who sort of just, again, reflexively defend and say this isn't an issue, Gosder Charlis, who is black, felt the same way as you until he experienced it for himself as a visiting player. All right, Adrian, we're going to take a brief time out here on Season Ticket. When we come back, we're going to talk more about this. And we're going to talk about the role that sports talk radio plays in dealing with racism in Boston sports. Stay tuned for that. We have some good news here for you on Season Ticket. Season Ticket is now available on Spotify. So if you use Spotify, just search for us and follow us there. And of course, you can still subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm back now with Boston Globe Metro columnist Adrian Walker, who contributed to and wrote the story The Bigot in the Stands and other stories, which is part of the Globe's Spotlight series examining race in Boston. So let's talk about the role of sports talk radio in this situation, in the defense of Boston, in dealing with racism in Boston. There are some sports talk radio hosts who have been particularly adamant and fervent in defending the city and in saying that the Adam Jones incident didn't happen. I think one thing that I've realized, Adrian, in sports, and the mistake that I have made in the past, frankly, when it comes to sports on any subject, never mind one as serious as this, is taking that small sample of people who listen to and call into sports talk radio, extrapolating that and saying that's how all Boston sports fans feel. So you have to be careful there. But how much do you think what you hear on sports talk radio from hosts and callers is reflective of the attitudes about race among Boston sports fans?
I think sports radio is probably more conservative than sports fans as a whole. But I think the way they shut down conversation about race is something that's really detrimental for the city. You know, not only do they deny it, you can't even talk about it without getting hung up on some of these shows. And I think that's absolutely outrageous.
Yeah, I do think that on some of the shows, the conversation is a little bit intellectually disingenuous for this reason. They're playing to a crowd. You know, I think a lot of times people get confused. Sports talk radio ultimately is entertainment. A lot of the people on sports talk radio are former journalists, and were great former journalists. But in that role, they're not journalists. They're entertainers.
And not only are they playing to a crowd, they're playing to an all-white crowd, which I think is an important piece of this, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I don't know what the demographics of each of the stations are, but what I do know is when you guys did this study, the research for this article, you went to each of the venues here and sort of counted the African-American fans that you saw. And that stood out to me. And when you went to Fenway Park, I believe it was about 2% for a random game. And then when you looked at, and it was interesting, the game that was picked for the Patriots. It was the September 24th game at Gillette Stadium against the Houston Texans. And according to the Globe article, a random counting of nearly 8,000 ticket holders, only 2% were black. That was the day that 18 Patriots players decided to take a knee in response to President Trump's criticism of NFL players kneeling during the anthem. That was that same day. And those players from the Patriots who took a knee were roundly booed, which was interesting to me, Adrian, because the season before, the Patriots signed a guy by the name of Michael Floyd, who is African-American, and he came from the Arizona Cardinals, and the Cardinals had released Michael Floyd for getting what is called a super extreme DUI in Arizona.
Yes.
When he first got here and caught his first ball, he got a rousing ovation. Rousing ovation. These guys got booed, including Captain Devin McCourty, who's been a part of two Super Bowl champions, but the guy with the DUI gets cheered. And to me, that plays into this idea that people don't acknowledge there are human beings under these helmets, and that these guys don't exist just to entertain you. And I think a lot of African-American athletes, particularly in Boston, get put in this box by fans and some sports talk radio people where all they're supposed to do is entertain them. They exist solely for entertainment. They're not people who exist outside of that and have to deal with real-world issues like racism.
Well, you know, I was at the game first outside to help count the crowd, and then I went into the stadium to see what would go on when they kneeled for the anthem. And, you know, it's really startling to be in there and to watch Patriots fans boo half the Patriots team. But you're right. It speaks to the fact that they're just supposed to shut up and play. They're not supposed to have views. Nothing outside is supposed to affect them. Nothing is supposed to intrude on the bubble. And, you know, and they got booed for it.
Yeah, they did. And I think that speaks to, that's bigger than Boston. I think it's a long history in America of looking at African Americans and looking at them and putting them in this box of you exist to entertain us.
Yes, it says a lot about the relationship between fans and athletes.
Yeah.
And that's about race. That's about money. That's about a lot of things. They don't want to see anything but that you go out and play.
Well, even the president has said, you know, these guys should just be grateful that they have these jobs and they're making, like they didn't earn it on their own and they don't have a tremendous amount of talent. Look, those are jobs that very few people have the athleticism and work ethic to do. It's not like somebody just said, hey, Devin McCourty, I'm just going to hand you a job in the NFL and you're going to make $9 million a year as a safety. He earned it. He earned that opportunity through his skill and his hard work and his talent.
He did. And lest we forget, they're not protesting the anthem. Okay? They're protesting the way African Americans have been treated at the hands of police. That's the other thing that gets completely lost.
Yeah,
they're
I do think people protesting the flag. I do think people conflate those issues, and I think some people do it on purpose. It's sort of an intellectual countermeasure so that you don't have to really acknowledge the seriousness and validity of the message when it comes to racial inequality and social injustice. When we talk about everything we've talked about, Adrian, do you think it affects the ability of Boston sports teams to get African-American players? I mentioned the Torrey Hunter situation, but certainly high-profile African-American players have come to Boston. Kevin Garnett came here.
Mm-hmm.
David Price came here, and I know David Price has had a rough go of it, and I just want to get this out of the way right now. There's I know we've talked a lot about race. I make no excuses for David Price and the way he treated Dennis Eckersley. He was 100% wrong. I don't care if he's African-American. I don't care if he's Caucasian, Latino, Asian, from the planet Mars. He was 100% wrong, and I will say that till the day I die. He was wrong.
Okay,
he owes Dennis Eckersley an apology.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
And I think he owes Dennis Eckersley an apology, too.
Yes.
But if a white player did what Price did, would he still be getting beat up for it 4 or 5 months later?
For the Red Sox?
Yes.
I think he would. For the Red now another
I
team
don't.
Maybe not. But, I do think for the Red Sox that he would. I really do.
I have been surprised at the shelf life of this story.
Well, so here's the thing with David Price. If we're going to talk about Price, what I find alarming about Price is that before the Adam Jones incident, in a story with our very own Peter Abraham, he alluded to the fact that as a player for the Red Sox on the home team in his first season with the team in 2016, he was called racial epithets while warming up in the bullpen. These are by his own fans. And you know what people said? People said he was playing the race card and he was just trying to deflect from the criticism he drew. And I think, to me, that's indicative of the problem in Boston. The Eckersley thing, I think that criticism is legitimate. But the fact that people turned on him when he told you this was an issue, ignored him and just said, oh, you're being a baby. You're trying to deflect from the criticism you got for your season. That's a real issue. And I think that's something that never would have happened to a white player.
That's right. I mean, we're going to get into this. I mean, it doesn't affect the Red Sox ability to get black players as much as it would, because there are only a handful of teams that can pay players what the Red Sox pay players. You know, if you can do $230 million contracts, you can sign black players. But what's it going to be like to play here? What's that atmosphere like?
That's a question.
It's very interesting. You know, one of the things I wanted to do for the story was interview the black Red Sox players, none of whom would be interviewed for this story. Because they are terrified of talking about race. They're terrified of the reaction they're going to get, specifically, I believe, from talk radio. You know, people are going to say, oh, you don't love Boston. Oh, you don't want to be here. They don't want to deal with it. I went to Sam Kennedy and said, I want to interview all your black players. And he said, great. And then it turned out none of them would talk about it. They will not. This is the third rail for them. And I think that says something about the city, too.
That's really interesting. That's interesting that they wouldn't talk. And I know I was there the day after the Adam Jones incident. Jackie Bradley Jr. did speak. Chris Young did speak. I would say that they were very measured and they were very careful. Mookie Betts spoke, but not in the clubhouse. He waited until after batting practice when there were fewer reporters and I think maybe one camera, if even that. Yeah. To address it. So it is difficult. You certainly don't want to anger and alienate your own fan base. But at the same time, if you talk to these guys in private, I mean, they know that it's an issue. And I believe Sam Kennedy said, he said it to me the day after the Adam Jones thing. And I think he said it to you guys as well, that they did have their own players when they spoke to them privately,
yes,
confirmed that they had heard racial slurs yelled from the stands.
That's right. Yes, he has confirmed that.
Yeah, I mean, that's unfortunate.
And by the way, I'm not beating up on the players. I don't necessarily blame them, and I understand the conflict they feel. But it's just an interesting thing to watch.
Well, to go back to sort of the Sports Talk Radio thing, the one thing that's interesting to me, again, when they say, okay, there's no proof of Adam Jones, and again, they try and play all this stuff off like it's ancient history, like everybody who was around for busing is now, you know, dead. They're all deceased.
Right.
It's like, I don't think that's the case. But you don't have to go back that far. You don't have to go back to busing. You don't have to go back to Bill Russell. You can go back 5 years to 2012. When Joe Ward scored the game-winning and series-winning goal in overtime in Game 7 at TD Garden for the Washington Capitals to eliminate the Boston Bruins.
Canova with a chance, backhander loose, they score! They score! They score! It's over! Ward on the rebound! Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Boston!
And at that point, there was a hail of racist tweets that popped up on Twitter calling Ward the N-word from Bruins fans. Now, the defense was, hey, look, a lot of these tweets aren't from Boston. They're from other parts of the country and even North America where there are Bruins fans. I can tell you I did it at the time. There were people who tweeted that who had avatar pictures of them on the tee. There were people, if you looked at their Twitter account, it said they were from Danvers, from Boston. People who, if you looked at some of their other tweets, said they were attending a high school football game at a suburb that starts with an M south of Boston. So it wasn't just people from across. These were Boston sports fans. Even if you go, I checked it last night. Some of these people, you can still find the tweets. You'll look at it. Their Twitter background is the Patriots 5 Super Bowl banners. So give me a break with this idea that none of these fans were from Boston. And that happened. And that was just 2012. That's not ancient history.
Right. This is not ancient history. And everybody who's honest in talking about this issue knows that this is not ancient history. This is something we are dealing with in the here and now. And we're dealing with it not only in the sports world. It reverberates beyond that in the way the city itself is perceived.
Do you think that it's gotten better? I mean, what progress and improvement did you guys find in doing this story? And there are certainly African-American athletes who have loved their experience here, including Isaiah Thomas, who when he left for the Players Tribune, he wrote basically a love letter to Boston and was a great. He said he fell in love with Boston.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that it's gotten better. But, you know, what's better? Yes, Kevin Garnett loved playing here. Yes, Paul Pierce loved playing here. Yes, David Ortiz loved playing here. But, you know, that doesn't mean that everything's all fine now. It's not like we're all good.
Where do you hope it goes from here? Not just in sports, Adrian, but just in the city of Boston. What are the conversations that need to be had?
The conversations we need to have in Boston are about expanding economic opportunity and just decreasing racist tension in general. You know, I think the Take the Lead initiative that the sports teams have embarked on is a really good thing. You know, they've come together in a way they don't normally do to try to stop racist behavior in the stands. I think that's really important. you know, and I think that it, you know, there's no one solution to this. It's something that everybody is going to have to continue to work on.
And the last thing I'll just ask you is, do you think any of this reputation Boston has in sports is unfair relative to the other cities you mentioned in the article at the very beginning?
I think that Boston's history means that everything is going to stick to it in a way that it doesn't in other places. Whether Boston is really a worse place to play or to be a sports fan than Pittsburgh or Kansas City is hard for me to say.
Yeah, it's a really difficult conversation, obviously, to have. Hopefully we did a good job with this conversation. I certainly enjoyed talking with you, Adrian. That's Adrian Walker, Boston Globe Metro columnist. You can find him on Twitter. His handle is @Adrian_Walker. Adrian, thanks for joining us on Season
Ticket. Thanks so much for having me on Season Ticket. This has been great.
And that's it for this edition of Season Ticket, a production of the Boston Globe and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. If you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend and leave us a review. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.